As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Welcome to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price. Brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub.
There's a lead pass. In on goal, McDavid scores! 3-1 Canada!
Here's the 1-2 pitch from Martinez. Ball hit out into center field. Going back, Marquise Grissom. He's got it! Dennis Martinez has pitched a perfect game.
There's a shot. They score! Duclair! 1-0! 23 seconds in. Canada jumps on top.
Here's the 2-1 pitch. Cordero swings. Base hit. The Expos will win. The Expos will win. Cordero with a base hit to win the ball game in the bottom of the ninth inning.
The drought is over. Drink it in, Canada. World champions.
It's Elliott.
Elliott for the touchdown.
And now here's your host, Elliott Price.
I don't know about you, but I mark off a hockey schedule in chunks. Like, that seven-game road trip was a chunk unto itself. Even if it was broken up by the holidays and maybe even a stay at home, the games were played consecutively on the road, thus a seven-game road trip. Knew there were some coming home, didn't realize it was just one and it was just tonight. So color me surprised that it's just a one-day stay, and the next two will also be away from the Bell Center Wednesday and Thursday at Winnipeg and Minnesota. The amazing Habs of 16-17, which has at least lately included a fair-sized group from The Rock, had managed to more than tread water during a horrendous spell of bad injury luck. Better than most expected or hoped for, Alex Galchenyuk on his way back now that Brendan Gallagher has been claimed for the better part of 2 months. It's amazing really how this market works, or perhaps it's just opinion built up over time. But for some, Coach Therrien will never be the architect of victories. That will belong to Carey Price. Coach Therrien will not be the guy who gets victories assigned to him. Carey Price and whomever he's dragged along with him, though there has been some Shea Weber and Alex Radu love to go around. Lou's and Therrien's detractors will point to his deficiencies. Constant line changes, doesn't grow young players, power play always sucks, players don't get proper ice time, and yada, yada, yada. But for the most part, they have won with him as coach. It's amazing how lucky and how often he has been lucky. In victory, for some, he may even have set a record for most victories produced by luck in Habs history. It's Monday, and we don't have to watch another game for the wild card weekend. Maybe we'll be presented with a decent football game tonight. You may or may not know. College championship runs today, the NCAA Fiesta Bowl. I don't know, Fiesta Bowl used to be filled with chips and there was dip beside it, but okay. How are you, Grant? Your team is still alive, and you didn't even have to worry about the Cowboys on the weekend.
It was a perfect weekend of football for me, except Aaron Rodgers walked away from the game. Wouldn't have minded a limp, you know, a little something, but it's what I thought. I thought it'd be Green Bay-Dallas.
I hate to tell you that the last time he walked away with a limp from the game...
It ended up being pretty good.
He hasn't lost since.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, we thought he was dead, right? We were watching, sitting in the studio, watched him grab his hamstring, and you go, okay, he's not going to be able to run around, he's not going to be able to do this or that or the other thing.
Guy's great. I mean, I've never said anything bad about Aaron Rodgers.
No, he'd come back and haunt you.
But this is the rematch of the last time Dallas had a good football team. They went into the playoffs, looked like a real good team. You know, they had beat Seattle that year. They're coming in now, Green Bay. This is the chance. I would really like to see
them.
You
think
them.
It helps, you know, having played a game in Dallas, you know, they get the home advantage. They got the bye week. Some Green Bay Packers will be beat up. Saw
yeah, Jordy
some
Nelson's
players.
Finished. Yeah, they haven't said it. Jordy yeah. Nelson, they were saying hip when they watched that, yeah. The announcers.
No,
that's
they
clearly
said,
ribs.
They said ribcage. No,
they
I
said,
watched
well, the announcer
yeah.
said, and even in the second half, goes, he left with what's probably a hip injury.
Okay.
To me,
when
it,
I
helmet
tuned
in the ribs.
When I tuned in, I heard him say ribs, and it could be worse than that.
It's that's definitely what broken. Yeah. Well, they said now I heard maybe two broken ribs. They're not ruling him out. But how effective can you be reaching up, right?
Yeah.
But Randall
it doesn't
Cobb,
matter. It
Randall
doesn't
Cobb
matter.
Seemed all right.
The Packers will find receivers.
Yeah.
Not having Jordy Nelson is not going to be the problem, right? When the game is over, if Green Bay loses, it's not going to be because Jordy Nelson wasn't there.
I agree 100%. And I'm excited for that. I'm excited for every game next week except one.
Yeah.
New
well,
England,
was,
Houston.
Yeah. You know, maybe someone will beat up Tom Brady.
Yes.
No, seriously.
You're
allowed to do anything in the NFL.
Just
do you see
us?
What they did? Look, it's so what can you do, right? One guy comes in and puts his helmet under the chin of the quarterback. It's what they did to Miami.
Yeah.
Why can't they do that? Late hit. Oh, 15
yeah,
yards.
But Tom Brady,
oh,
you're getting that,
game.
No problem.
So what?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Do I care? And I've been saying this for years. I'm just a bad man. But it's football. What's 15 yards? What's a suspension
well,
for one
what's
game?
What's the score
you
in the game?
You go in first
15,
quarter.
Okay, first quarter, yeah. Give
I'm
up
taking him
yards.
Out. I'm not spreading this around. There'll be no bounty gate. I'm not paying anybody for it.
2-0.
Our plan in the National Football League is to hurt the other quarterback so that their team will lose.
Well,
that's the way
you can hurt
football
mine
goes.
If you want. I'm okay with it. I'm one of only two teams left
you,
that can handle a quarterback injury.
You think I can't hurt multiple
Don't let Elliott Price on the field.
You
this
think
is what
I
I've
can't
learned.
Hurt multiple I'm wearing a helmet. I don't even have to be part of the play. I can be completely... Suspend me for half a year. Okay? Team will take care of me. The boys will take care of me. They'll come. They'll give me part of their paychecks. You can't stop that. You can suspend me. You can take away my money. But if I knock your team out of the playoffs with a dirty hit?
No, it's fair. I mean, I'm glad we don't see that in sports, right? Like, you try to hurt guys.
Oh,
you don't want to injure
know.
Them.
I don't know we don't see that. We see that in sports. That guy ran his helmet into the Miami quarterback's chin, and for all intents and purposes, he should have been done at that point.
I'll say this. He looked like he was going for the guy's chest. Still illegal, by the way, just to put that out there. You cannot lead with your head anymore.
Okay,
but 5 years ago, that's not even a problem.
While we take this break and get ready for the opening face-off, okay, I'm going to Google the human anatomy. Okay, I'm going to show you chin, chest. I know they both start with a CH, but they look very, very different. I'm Elliott Price. That's Grant Robinson. This is Sportsnet Tonight on CFMB 1280 AM Montreal. And we'll take a break and come back with the opening faceoff after this.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Tackling the latest headlines and the hottest topics, it's time for the opening face-off with Elliott Price and Grant Robinson.
Today we're going to do something a little bit different. It's still going to be topics
oh,
we're going to look
great.
At, but they're going to be set up
you're
in a certain way.
You're throwing this thing into a tizzy. I'll
well,
be
look,
all confused. I'm new at this.
Well, hear me out here. This weekend had a lot of big games, you know, in different sports, but it had a lot of moments that I find caused very strong reaction on both sides. Yeah. It doesn't mean one's right, doesn't mean the other's wrong,
yes.
But you saw a lot of argument on certain plays. So all this is going to be is which side you land
okay.
on. Number one, yes. Habs and Leafs played on Saturday night.
They
great
did.
Game, by the way. Loved the game, the pace. Couldn't ask for more. There was some fights, some intensity. Really like that, but one play in particular got a lot of attention and a lot of reaction. Zach Hyman was driving the net.
Yes.
Got hit, gets touched by Emelin, no question, whether it's hit, not.
Don't lead me in one direction.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I said gets touched by Emelin.
Yes.
Crashes into Carey Price.
Yes.
Gets mauled after the play.
Yes.
Gets the penalty.
Yes.
Now, a lot of eyes saw it as Hyman's fault.
No.
And blame the forward for the contact,
no.
saying he's attacking Carey Price,
no.
like Chris Kreider did.
No.
So others saw it as Emelin causing it. Well, how do you see this play?
There was nowhere else for him to go.
Because if you watch the play, he's driving and he is cutting back away from the net.
If no one had bothered him, he's would not have ended Carey up
Price.
Where he ended up.
Yeah, but so
he would have skated
this?
Around the goaltender, because it's the same thing as when you lay a clean hit on somebody, the whole team comes after
well,
you.
That,
because
that part I understand.
I don't understand that.
No, I hate that. But yeah. I'm saying they called a penalty on yeah. him. People are saying that this is targeting Carey Price. If you do not drive the net against Carey Price, you do not score against Carey Price.
But you have to understand that we're looking at a fragile goaltender
yeah.
who's already been knocked out for a season. Not only that, he was knocked out of a playoff series in which the team was one win away from the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
So you can understand where this is coming from Montreal Canadiens fans. That's how they're going to see it. We always see things through the eyes of our own team.
But the players as well, if you listen to Shea yeah. Weber, talk, now, they went after
Mike. They're even more part of that team than the fans,
do,
you realize.
Do you know what bothers me about this whole, and it's not Emelin, it's not Habs, it's not Leafs, I'm talking about this play in general in hockey. You see it all the time. A guy's in front of the net, and the defenseman cross-checks him in yeah. the back, throws him on top of his goalie, and then punches him for being on his goalie.
Don't be on my goalie.
Don't throw him. If you, Emelin's play.
Okay, sir. Let me ask you a question.
Cross-check him the other way.
You now have cross-checked someone onto your goalie. You're not going to punch him?
I'm not going to cross-check him in the direction of my goalie.
Like, well, that wasn't, I don't believe
this
that
was. This wasn't a cross-check.
Whoa,
different example.
It wasn't your plan.
Well, okay, Emelin, if
you
that
just
wasn't
ended,
his plan,
I'm sorry.
Has to understand
okay,
what he was
no,
doing.
Get away from my goalie.
Well, for the record, Alexi Emelin doesn't do anything.
All
he
right,
doesn't
I
go
understand.
After Hyman. He knows
okay.
it was him.
I don't think that this goes on the Toronto player. But you're on my goalie. I have to hit you.
And I'm fine with Shea Weber hitting him. Even Zach Hyman said,
there you go.
I know I'm paying the
that's
price.
Right.
He said I'd prefer it's one guy.
Yeah.
But you know that's going to happen. Brendan Gallagher
yeah.
gets attacked
yeah.
almost after every play. It happens.
Yeah.
Emelin's the same guy who touches Chris Kreider. That one's more controversial. I get it. But he doesn't touch Chris Kreider. It's just a breakaway. When you're beat and a guy is full speed near your goalie, maybe touching him isn't the best idea. And especially hitting him towards him. If Carey Price gets injured on that play, I'm just like Alexi Emelin, when he hits Hyman, there's nothing Hyman can do except go into Carey Price full speed. And he's not the only defenseman that does it. I don't understand.
I'm good. Next.
So you agree, though,
yes.
It's on the defenseman, but you say that they're not going to stop doing it.
No.
All right. I still think they should. I don't understand why they do.
Yeah.
Patrick Laine,
yes.
Involved in one of the biggest stories of the weekend, obviously.
Yeah.
Recipient of a huge hit from Sabres, D-man
yes.
Jake McCabe.
Yes.
Suffers a concussion on the play.
Yes.
A lot of comments were made about it being dirty.
No.
And it's open ice hit.
Yes.
This should be out of the game.
It was an open ice hit.
And what they say is that the NHL needs to protect their star players.
Well, they do. But this wasn't a situation where they need to protect their star players. Fact of the matter is, the puck was at his feet. It was a half a second gone.
Yep.
There has to be a count, you know, like one, two, whatever it is, that the puck is left, and now you're hitting someone and there's no puck there. Fact of the matter is, he was on his way to deliver a hit. Skate with your head up. This is the National Hockey
yeah.
League. I thought it was a clean hit. And if you want to come after him, hey, look, your star player is now lying on the ice.
That sucks.
So
and let's
fine.
Be honest. Patrick Laine, I'm fine with them fighting after that. They don't even think about it. Nobody knows if it's dirty or not
right.
on the ice. They just see their guy lying down, concussed clearly. You can tell right away his
yep.
hands are up. If you don't like this hit and you're saying the NHL needs to protect their play, then take hitting out of the game, because that is, if you don't hit him there,
yeah.
Patrick Laine skating in on an odd man rush is a guy who scores almost every shot he's taking. You see where he's going. He telegraphed it. You lined him up. He actually hits Laine lower. If you look, Laine is such a big guy. He gets hit in the chest on that hit. The head is not contacted whatsoever. I have no problem with the hit. And I understand you want to protect your stars, and it sucks to see them hurt. But that's for dirty hits. This is a clean hit. Stop it. I don't understand why people don't
you
like that.
You heard Grant Robinson. Stop it.
Odell Beckham Jr.,
yes.
no stranger to controversy,
yes.
Took his teammates on a Miami boat trip after
yes.
their Week 17 win ahead of the wildcard game. I think you knew if they lost this weekend, this was going to get brought up.
Well, no, they didn't just have to lose. He had to have a crappy game.
There you go. That too. But
that
decision has been highly criticized, right? Since then, a lot of people are kind of attacking him for it, and the media. Now, and saying that that's a big reason why they lost to the Packers the way they did. So how do you see it? Like, you don't like what he did, but it didn't affect the game. Where do you stand?
So wait a minute. Man was on a boat and he got some sun in Florida, and that's why they lost the football game.
Is this what you're telling me?
Is this how this works?
However,
if you're going to be out there having a good time, right, then you should deliver on Sunday afternoon or Sunday night or whatever it is, because you know a lot of people are going to look at it that way, whether it's right or wrong. And I think it's wrong. But it's not like after the fact you're going to go, oh, I can't believe so many of you think that way.
No, that's the stupid part.
You know there are going to be millions of people who are going to say that's the reason you lost. So if you're going to do that, then you have to do that.
Yeah, especially because it's you, right?
Right.
It's Odell Beckham Jr. knows how this is going to be portrayed.
It doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter all the people that think that's not the reason.
Yeah,
you have to know going in there's going to be a lot of people. You shouldn't be shocked by someone saying that's why you lost. So if you're going to do that, you know that's coming. You better either win or have a great game. And he and they did neither.
And don't tell me if they win and the team plays well and they look like they're playing like a team that doesn't get... But he doesn't say, you know, that was team building.
You know what? It's a lot like being a broadcaster and saying shutout. You could say it 100 times.
Doesn't change.
But the one time that they break the shutout, after you say it, it's your fault. You're the jinx, which is ridiculous.
I'll agree with what you said.
Thank you.
Cannot prove it affected the outcome.
Of course.
Having said that, you know how it will be perceived.
3 for 3 now.
What I don't like about what he did is he knew how poorly he played against Green Bay in the regular season. That was one of his worst games. He was targeted 13 times. Yeah. He had, I think, 4 catches. On the two games, you compile both games.
I'm compiling.
23 targets, 84 yards. This is one of the best receivers in the league. He did nothing. And if you look at it, I'm not going to call it a drop. Okay, it hits both his hands, but that would have been a hell of a catch, let's be honest, at the end of the game there, the third down, where
he made those catches, right? But he needed to run that one out. I don't think that he had to jump
when he did.
Yeah.
And again, we don't know. It's hard to say the science of would he have
cold,
got to it.
It's lots of
it's
things.
It's not a drop, but that's a catch he's made before.
All right, so this is a learning experience. Yeah. We'll see what he comes back with in his career.
Like you said, you bring attention to yourself, you better deliver. This one is going to hit a little closer to home for you, and it's not something I've heard, to be honest. I haven't heard it from anybody, but I was watching the game, and before the score was done, Houston-Oakland, I'm talking first drive of the game, I see J.J. Watt on the sidelines, pumping his team up. I know it's a different injury. I understand Derek Carr's got a broken leg right now.
Do you think Derek Carr should be there?
I'm saying, does it bother you that he wasn't at the game at all?
Absolutely not, no. It bothers me that the offensive coordinator didn't give the kid a chance. It bothers me that on the first two drives, he pretty much said to the kid, I think that you could lose the game for us. You know what?
Absolutely.
You have yourself a rookie quarterback, come out and give him a chance to show him that you have confidence in him. Throw the ball upfield. What's this along the line of scrimmage? He ended up with an interception, you know?
Yeah, it's awful.
And I don't think that he would have, you know, judging from what I saw from him, the Raiders weren't going to win the game. Although, if the three balls that were dropped were caught, it certainly would have been closer. It's a 3-point game. You're driving. Crabtree drops the ball. You're surely going to be in field goal range for Janikowski. It's going to be a tie game at that point. Instead, you give up the ball. They go the other way. They score. Okay.
The Clowney interception.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
He threw it along the line
of scrimmage.
Yeah.
You know, instead of throwing the ball upfield, what are you doing? So I didn't feel good about the offensive game plan from Bill Musgrave, who's one of the best in the business. Wasn't happy with the way he called the game. But this wasn't a game that the Oakland Raiders were going to win, as it turns out. And that's just the way it goes. So
I agree with that.
I have no problem with Derek Carr not being there. That's the same thing as the guys being out.
But hear me out. And if he's a receiver, I don't care necessarily. And I'm not saying this changes my opinion, Derek Carr. Imagine what he's going through right now, right? This is your moment. The team is back in the playoffs 14 years because of you, and you can't be there.
I'm sorry.
Hold on.
What if someone runs him over on the sideline and breaks the other leg?
Well, that's what I was going to say. And look, I even wrote this down. I said crutches, wheelchair, whatever, but I get what you're saying. Maybe you don't want to be on the sideline. Put him up in the press box because he knows that offense better than anybody. I think Connor Cook could have been helped by talking with Derek Carr, who knows how to read an NFL defense. And just like Tony Romo all year, did you not see him next to the quarterback's coach talking to Dak Prescott? I'm not saying it would have changed
Tony
the outcome.
Romo,
I would have liked to have seen.
If Prescott goes down, Romo comes in.
No, Romo wasn't dressed at the beginning. Remember,
but that's different. They're paying the guy, and he's not hurt.
But
Romo
at the beginning. I'm talking game
week
one.
I understand, but he's not the same hurt.
Well, fair. It's not the same thing.
Right.
A broken leg. I would have just liked to see him there.
We disagree. disagree.
And that's fair.
Which makes you
like
wrong.
I said, nobody else has said it. I just saw it before they won. Right. I would have liked to see them there.
I don't care. Never thought about it.
There's a perception out there that the four teams that lost this weekend,
really,
people are saying, you know, they crapped the bed. They didn't deserve to be there, which, by the way, is garbage. They deserve to be there because their regular season record got them there.
So the Raiders didn't deserve to be there? The Raiders deserve to be playing in New England next week. That's what the Raiders deserve.
And
they didn't deserve to have their quarterback with a broken leg.
I think if Derek Carr plays that game, I think it's very clear. I know you can never say for sure, but I think watching you could tell.
That's how wrong you are, my friend.
No, but you can never say
Raiders,
he would have won for sure.
Raiders would not be playing in New England next week.
Oh, fair.
They would be playing in New England the week after.
They'd be playing Pittsburgh.
That's right.
That's true. But and who they would play? So they would have played Miami, or no? They wouldn't have. They would have had the bye.
Right.
But I will say this: look, the four teams that lost, they didn't lose pretty. No. But they played four very good teams. Like Houston, I think that game's different. You had a third-string quarterback who never played a game or never started a game. That's totally different. But the other three...
Every team that made the playoffs, right now the National Football League has the teams with the highest winning percentages in sports that make the playoffs.
I agree full, like with the health the way it is right now.
12 out of 32 make the playoffs. I got no problem with that. Every team that makes the playoffs in the NFL deserves to make the playoffs. Plus, they get the hell beat out of them during the regular season.
And with the way the health is right now, look, Derek Carr can't play.
Yeah.
I think this is the best eight teams right now. I think we're getting to see them.
We're good, yeah.
And that's that.
The riffraff's gone.
The riffraff is gone, he says.
Well, you know, Oakland
take
without
that,
Derek
Kalis,
Carr.
Take that, Kalis. Take that, riffraff. I'm telling him you called this team riffraff.
That's what they turned out to be, my friend.
Fair enough.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Right, so the Canadians down 1-0 against Washington. You know the injuries they've been through, and yet there they are, one of the best teams in the National Hockey League. How have they done it? How is it different from last year?
Big difference. First of all, I'll say the leadership group, you know, they're doing a fantastic job. So kids are coming in. They're coming in a really different atmosphere. The team spirit has been great since day one, and their leadership group doing a fantastic job.
So there you go. Coach on the leadership of the team. And all the kids that have come up, they've done a good job. People have been clamoring for Big Mike McCarron for quite a while, and he's done a good job while he's been here.
With Michael, the thing it's good, and he's getting better every year, you know, since we drafted him. He's more comfortable this year than he was last year. There's still a lot of things he needs to get to improve. But you know what? I like the progress. He's a presence. He's got decent skills. He's doing a good job in front of the net on a power play, obviously, the last two games. But more and more, he's getting comfortable to that level.
All right. And before you get your hopes up on this guy, it almost doesn't matter what he does while he's here, short of being the best player on the ice. It's a numbers game. Certain amount of guys are getting paid. There are contracts. There are waivers. And he is most likely to go back to the American Hockey League. All right, the championship game underway. It's Clemson and Alabama. For Bama coach Nick Saban, keep your team calm.
I know that it's a tough thing to do, but I think there's a relative degree that you try to maintain. As coaches, we want to put them in the best positions that they can from a technical standpoint, from a psychological standpoint, in terms of how they're approaching the game. So if you don't have the right mindset, though, it's very difficult to perform. And the one thing that we don't want is a lot of anxiety. That's not something that's going to help you perform well, is to have a lot of anxiety. Well, I can't speak for the other team, but I think our guys have stepped up several times this year when they really needed to. And I think that comes from a lot of maturity and a lot of great leadership on the team, and also a perseverance, not getting affected, not losing your poise. All those things, I think, have benefited our team tremendously.
For Clemson, it's on quarterback Deshaun Watson. Back to this game.
You know, even though last year was a short trip, we enjoyed it. And now it's a little extended, and, you know, being able to see the city and see, you know, Arizona a little bit more. and just to be able to, you know, have another opportunity to play on that field. So many great players been able to play on that field and on this stage. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be great. It's going to be, you know, a lot of cameras, a lot of people watching. So, you know, we're up for the task.
All right. So there you go. There's the NCAA championship just getting underway, 4.5 minutes in. 4th and 1 at the Bama 40. And now Clemson calls timeout. So big play coming up. They'll make up their minds on what they're going to do. Of course, the National Football League wild card weekend in the books. And it was just another Hail Mary for Aaron Rodgers.
I was thinking pre-snap about where we're at in the field and kind of trying to judge how far I was going to drop back. But I threw up about the 50. And in this type of weather with that height on the ball, it's tough to throw out of the end zone. It's tough being on the other side, especially with no time on the clock like that. Go from a tight 7-6 game to now you're up 8. So that's a big play for us.
Now, I know, Grant, that you are in love with your rookie running back, but, man, Le'Veon Bell.
I still think he is the best all-around running back in the NFL. He can catch. He lines up a receiver and dominates. He lines up in the backfield. He's a stud.
Here's Ben Roethlisberger, and he does invoke the name of a great running back, although he tempers his comparison. Have a listen.
He brings a little bit of everything to the table. You know, he's patient, almost to, like, I'm standing back there and I'm watching. I'm like, are you going to go at any time here? You know, but he's so patient. And then when he needs to put his head down and run someone over, he does that. He's a powerful back. You know, he can pick and choose. He's, obviously, if he gets one-on-one with a guy in the hole or just beyond, there's so many times I get the best view of the house. I'll never forget Charlie Batch, when he was here, used to always tell me about how he would hand off and just watch Barry Sanders. And I'm not trying to put Le'Veon with Barry Sanders yet. You know, that's an awesome honor. But it is fun to sit and watch and just see what he's going to do.
Barry Sanders?
That's a hell of a comparison. I don't think he has the cuts necessarily, but
no,
patience.
No, but it's different. This guy's different. He does things that no one else has done.
He's so patient behind the line.
But he has the instant jets.
Yeah.
To find the hole and then he's gone. I mean,
and
he just stands there and he waits. But it's almost like a dangle from a hockey player.
Absolutely.
Right. You know, you wait until the other guy makes the move. And then you're golden.
Being the fastest doesn't always make you the best, right?
He's fast, but
he takes his time. Yeah. He comes in slow. Dangles is a perfect description.
All right. And, of course, so the Texans are on to the next round of the playoffs. It has been a nasty history for Houston. Bill O'Brien, at least this year, gets them one game further.
You know, I thought overall it's probably our best game, Brian, of the year. You know, I thought that there were times that, you know, weren't great, obviously, but that happens in every NFL game. I thought overall it was our most consistent game. I thought there were examples of complementary football. I thought we were able to flip the field position at times, which helped us, you know, pin them deep, make them drive it, and give our players a lot of credit. They executed the game plan well.
Good gumbo. I got the rambling fever. Said goodbye to Ma and Pa. Cross that old Red River. This is what I saw. I saw miles and miles of Texas. All the stars up in the sky.
All right, Grant, they didn't get the first down. You had to get it on third down. I couldn't believe it. I mean, you know, you're right at the 41, and you got to catch the ball across the line. You can't have that happen to you where you're still 2 yards short of the first down on the third-yard pass, and now you're going for it on fourth down. This is already a humongous play.
But that's what makes them.
You would have pinned Alabama deep. Instead, you've given them the ball on their own 40-yard line in a short field.
You gave them at least 20 yards there, right? Minimum by missing it. Even if you punt it, it's a touchback. It's 20 yards. Again, this game last year, 45-40. Deshaun Watson has proven he can score. But this defense is pretty incredible. One of the best defenses I've seen play. Like, if you watch them, they had 11 defensive touchdowns this year.
right, Alabama just running down the field right now. Won't be long before they put it in the end zone. We'll keep you up to date on what's going on there. Montreal Canadiens down 1-0 after one. Grant's got an update, and then we'll talk to Mark Dumont, managing editor of Habs Eyes on the Prize. We'll talk Canadiens and hockey and a whole bunch of other stuff. You're listening to Sportsnet tonight. I'm Elliot Price. This is CFMB 1280 AM in Montreal. Gonna live.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
All right. We'll get Mark Dumont coming up in just a moment. I was looking at Carey Price's numbers, and of course it's always about Carey Price, right? Did you know? I'll run you his save percentage numbers by month, okay? 954, 944, 899. So what happened to Carey Price in December? By the way, he went 11-5-3 during the month of December. But 899 save percentage, and his goals against averages 1-4, 1-8, 2-6, 1-9. So I'm not sure what happened in December for Carey Price, but things clearly changed for the Montreal Canadiens goaltender. And tonight they're down 1-0, and 15:22 left in period number two. And we're waiting for Mark Dumont. So, if you can help, you got him. Okay, he'll be on in just a moment. Also coming up tonight, we will celebrate. I hear you, Mark. Are you there?
Absolutely,
all
Elliot.
Right. How you doing?
Can't complain yourself.
All right. I'm just wondering, you know, because here it is. It's 15:15 left in the second period. Would you like to make a prediction what the time will be when the Canadiens score? Because they always do when you're on the air with us. It seems like always.
You know what I'm going to do, Elliot? I'm going to predict an Alexei Emelin goal.
Oh, wow.
How about
now,
that?
Did he say
goal or a hit? He said goal.
Goal.
Right?
Wow. He said goal, yeah. Wow, not only is he predicting goals, but from unlikely sources.
When's the last time he scored a goal? What, did he score a goal this year?
I think so. I think he scored his first goal in more than an entire season. I think he's going to score right now. Oh, that was pretty close. What a shot by Andrew Ghetto. And Canadians down 1-0. So what's the deal here? How is this possible? What's your interpretation? You're the guy with all the numbers. So how are the Canadians doing it when they don't have, really, the Montreal Canadiens out in front of Carey Price?
Yeah, it's a legitimate question, because ever since Alex Galchenyuk's gone down, the Canadiens are playing at a Stanley Cup contender level in terms of how many shots they're creating, how many scoring chances they're creating. Even their power play lately has been pretty decent. Last I checked, it was nearing top 10 in the league. So there's only one real issue right now, and that's their penalty kill has been fairly bad. But as it stands, Elliot, I'm looking at all the rookies. I'm looking at all the players that got their minutes increased, and all of them took advantage of their opportunity. So what I think is happening here is you have scoring by committee. Rookies are stepping up. You have guys like Jeff Petrie, who's playing like PK Subban 2.0. So really, I think it's a combination of a full team effort that's coming to fruition here. And we have to give some credit to Michel Therrien. He had to get creative, and it's paid off. His moves have legitimately paid off.
A lot of credit has been given to Kirk Muller, and I got to tell you that if you're giving credit to Kirk Muller, then you need to give credit to Coach Therrien. A lot of people were of the mind, well, first of all, there are people in this town that are never going to give Therrien credit, no matter what.
Ever.
It was a Stanley Cup, and it won't be him. It'll be somebody else. But the opinion by those people would be, prior to bringing this guy on, is he would never allow this, because you would always have the feeling that someone's coming to knock on your door to take your job.
Yeah, well, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Elliot, by saying that no matter what, he's not going to end up getting credit here. He's the one who asked for Kirk Muller to come in. He more or less brought in the heir apparent to his job and gave him a spot on the bench in the most critiqued market in hockey. So regardless, we can never really get a full idea of who's making the decisions, who's making this team better. But whether it's Mueller or Therrien, you always have to recognize that Michel Therrien took a pretty big step this summer and said, I need help here. So whether or not he deserved to even be here at the start of the year is a whole other question. But I think he does deserve some credit for bringing such an ex-player, an alumni, that would create controversy if things went wrong. Fortunately, things have gone quite right, and Kirk Mueller, I think his greatest asset is that he actually communicates with his players. So far, everything's gone exactly as perfectly as you can imagine, except for the injury front, and even then, the Habs have reacted really well, including the coaching staff.
You touched on this off the top, talking about how these players have stepped in, filled the void. Obviously, all these injuries caused a lot of these guys to get that chance. A lot of them have taken advantage. Are there any of these players that you think, even when the team gets fully healthy and has a full lineup, have earned themselves a full-time spot or a promotion?
I'm thinking Michael McGarren. And the reason I say this is that I have fairly low expectations for him. Really, the way he's been used by the Habs is he comes in, plays some fourth line shifts, he fights a lot, and then eventually they cut down his ice time in the third period. But from what I've seen this year, he's creating offense. He's using his size to hold the puck in the offensive zone. He's a behemoth on the power play. I mean, no goalie in the NHL can see around him. So even when you have guys like Bobby Farnham and Chris Terry that'll eventually be sent down, I'm hoping that Michael McGarren can keep a spot in this lineup simply because he brings a factor that not many Canadiens players can replace. And he's not just a goon. He can play real hockey. So if they give him a few more minutes of ice time, I think he can prove that he can become a valuable asset for the Canadiens. We also have to look at that center position moving forward. Will Thomas Plekanec be a center for the rest of his Montreal Canadiens career? Will Philippe Dano fall into that second line center when Alex Galchenyuk gets healthy? So the Canadiens have to keep an eye for the future and see what McGarren can do, maybe in a third line role.
Boy, oh boy. I tell you what, Arturi Lehkonen just had himself a shift. This guy is certainly going to be a force going forward. You look at him, as we talked about at the beginning of the year, you know, anybody that had a chance to see him as a young player knew that he had the capabilities of being one of the top six that the Canadiens needed. And if Lehkonen could be brought in along with Radulov, then all of a sudden, an incredibly weak position inside the top six would have been filled, and that would make this team a contender.
Yeah, and we do, again, we're going back to credit for the coach here. He's not historically a guy that'll trust rookies with a heavy workload or important usage, and he's done exactly that with Lehkonen. But we also have to look at where Lehkonen developed. So he went from the SM Liga in Finland to Sweden when he was really young. He was 18 years old, and he's been playing with pros since he's 17. So this is actually his fourth year of playing against men much bigger, much older than him. So he's not a rookie in the purest sense, but I agree with you, Elliot. Him and Radulov have been exactly what the doctor ordered. We've talked about centers and defensemen ad nauseum with this team, but it was clear they had absolutely no depth on wing. Those two guys have been game changers, especially since Brendan Gallagher hasn't been scoring this year.
Especially
Could you imagine the Habs without a Radulov, yeah, a Lehkonen, or a Brendan Gallagher scoring? You know, they'd be fighting for a really high draft pick.
Especially when you have a general manager who comes out of his team's worst season, or, you know, because they've had a couple of them lately, and that's how they got Galchenyuk. But one of the worst seasons in history, by saying that it's very difficult for me to find these people, that I'd have to give up what I don't want to give up to get a top six. So it almost sounded like he's telling you he can't do it. And one guy was already here. And let's face it, if Radulov didn't want to be a Montreal Canadian, he's here because he wanted to. And because of that, I have incredible positive feelings that there is no doubt in my mind that this is where he's going to stay.
Well, I think the Canadiens absolutely did themselves a favor by being the only team to offer him, you know, a reasonable salary there. We're looking at Detroit was offering, what, two years at $4 million. But a guy of Radulov's talent deserves at least a little bit of respect to get him into the, you know, the second tier of getting paid in the NHL. So I'm with you, Elliot. I think the Canadians not only struck iron, considering Bergevin admitted nobody wanted to join his team. So not only did they find one of the best guys available, he was one of the only guys available there. It's a really good relationship with both these teams. The Habs have relaunched Alex Radulov's NHL perception around the league. And I think that means a lot to him to finally get respected as a mature and productive player. You know, he was a kid when he was messing around in the NHL. And I think he really wanted to prove that he's come to the point where now he's a reliable franchise player.
Nikita Sherbak's first game, obviously a dream start for him. First game, first shot, first period, first goal. you know, in spectacular fashion, the clock's dying down, tie game. What did you make of the rest of his game, though? And what should fans expect from him, you know, in regards of a timeline or even when he does end up getting here? Do you see him being a significant asset for the Canadiens?
Yeah, and that seems to be the case a lot with rookies, eh, Grant? Coming in and scoring in the first game. I honestly thought Sherbak struggled other than that goal. I think he really looked like a rookie that was not the first on the call-up sheet. And but once he makes it to the NHL, his key asset here is that release and his ability to basically stick handle in a phone booth. We saw a little bit of that with his goal. All of his goals in the NHL have been either a fantastic release or really good stick handling in tight situations. So if he makes it to the Canadiens, I think it'll have to be in a top six role where he has an opportunity to really get a little more space out there, power play role, and then we'll see a guy that can beat goalies when he has space. His shot reminds me a lot of Lekkonen's. When he has enough space, he can pick that corner and fool NHL goalies. So NHL caliber shot, but his defensive play leaves a lot to desire. And I think it really showed that was his first game in the NHL. So a little more seasoning in the NHL. Maybe we'll see him fight for a spot in camp next year.
All right. Do you have to wonder about the mindset of Brendan Gallagher right about now? I mean, here it is. He's been hit on the hand twice. And I wonder if Montreal Canadiens players will be so willing to stand in front of the net with, you know, I know he scores goals, but he hurts people too.
Did you see the list?
Yes.
That was put on Twitter of Shea Weber's shot has fooled a whole lot of goalies, and it's also injured a whole lot of teammates. And for a guy like Michael McCarron, you know, that's kind of one of his ways to make it into the NHL. Fine, here's your ultimate test. You're going to go stand in front of Shea Weber's slap shots. You know, you're going to be a shield between you and the armored goalie, and the puck might hit you more often than not. Listen, it's a double-edged sword with Weber, and I'm sure he's going to try to keep it low, but what do you do, Elliot? What do you do? You can't tell him to not take that shot, so it's I guess that's when people say these guys are paid to play a dangerous game, that's exactly what they're referring to. You're standing in front of a cannon shot.
All right, Mark, great talking with you. By the way, epic fail tonight.
Canadians, no Emlyn goal.
No goal at all. Maybe you should have been.
It'll come. It'll come. When Yemlin goal comes, you'll thank me.
Talk to you next week.
All right. Have a good night, guys.
All right. Wow. I tell you, Washington had all kinds of chances here. I think they may go on the power play now. I don't know. Canadians are coming down the other way. Half a game left, and the Canadians down 1-0.
Mark Dumont. He did stop a sure goal.
What's that?
He stopped a sure goal, though. I know he didn't get Montreal a goal, but if you listen, or if you saw it, did you see that empty net for Williams?
Yeah.
Williams hits it, misses the open net. So I think that was Marc Dumont keeping it going.
Okay. I told you Canadians were going to go on the power play in the offensive zone with a stupid penalty from Washington. 1-0 Habs trailing Washington, but they're going on the power play. What an opportunity there. Who was that? Was that Farnham? Was that 14 or 44?
I think it was Farnham.
Okay, because Plekanec had a great chance.
It was not Plekanec. It almost hit the net, so it couldn't have been.
Oh, he just hit the net before. He was set up perfectly. Marc Dumont, of course, has eyes on the prize, the managing editor there. All right. We are celebrating. Okay, it's me. I'm celebrating. 1,600 career games for Coach Q. Three-time Stanley Cup winner with the Chicago Blackhawks, Joel Quenneville, and an opportunity today to join the boys in Toronto. We'll hear from Coach Q coming up in just a moment. You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson, CFMB 1280 AM in Montreal.
send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Welcome to the alleged show.
Hi, Ben.
Price. This is going to be a shame.
Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
That's baloney.
Horse hockey.
Ladies and gentlemen, wake the kids, phone the neighbors.
You don't scare me. I got chunks of guys like you in my stool.
Price. You want to touch my monkey?
We papa.
Yes.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
The Sportos, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Yeah.
Good luck, showboy.
The Chicago Blackhawks head coach, along with Gord Stellick and Chris Johnson, Darren Millard. Welcome to the program, Joel. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So tell me about this year's team, this year's performance by your Chicago Blackhawks, and where it ranks, because this is a team that, I mean, you had a lot of moving parts at the start of the year, and look at the standings in your first place again.
Well, we had a decent start. We got a lot of moving parts here as far as some new guys. We had six rookies right off the bat, and you know, getting some familiarity with one another was part of it. But we're winning some games. Our goaltending this year has been outstanding. That's probably the single reason why we got off to the start we did, because we're playing, I would say, ordinary, and we're starting to progress in our team game going into Christmas. Came out a little flat right around that time, and got three wins since, and got back to where we want to be. But we're progressing. I still think I don't know how good we are yet. I still think we got a lot of options as far as our lines go, and our opportunity to make different lines. Kaner's heating up. He had a couple of big nights as well. That line's been our go-to line all year as far as production and scoring big goals. And Isimov's been has had a special year so far, as has Hossa. Those two guys have scored big goals for us, and our defense is better. Yeah, we're deeper. We had 8D. We put the one kid Forsling down in the minors to keep him playing. So we're deep in that area, and so we've got some balance. I still think there's room to get better, though. We've been a little bit haven't had the puck as much as we had in the past.
Joel, your complete body work. I mean, I'll use Scotty Bowman as an example. Sometimes people would say, "Oh, anyone could coach those Montreal teams. You just open the doors and let them go out there." You've coached all different levels and calibers, and I'm curious, the challenge of coaching a team now, you know, full of star players, Stanley Cup winners, versus an up-and-coming team?
Well, we're when we first got here to Chicago, it was a it was one of these teams that I'm starting to think of looking at what Toronto has in front of them there, and it's one of those teams where you got a lot of young guys that have bright futures, potential to be great players, and we had some real special players here, and it looks like you guys got that same type of a makeup. But you got to learn a little bit along the way. You know, we went to the conference championship right off the bat and got a good lesson from Detroit what it takes to win and what you need, and but we've got these guys. They lead by example. Our leaders are not only great players, they make guys around them better. They make them accountable. And that balance really helps basically have everybody come and show up every single night and gives us a chance to win. So we're fortunate with our captains and our leaders that these guys they want to be great every single night, and these guys sense the importance of what it takes to be a pro and what it takes to win. And you know, as a coach, I would say we kind of help them open the door and get them out there. But these guys, I give a lot of the players, their top guys, definitely a lot of the credit for finding ways to win and making our team better.
Joel, 1,500 looks like an awfully big number, and you're the only third guy to get there with Scotty Bowman and Al Arbor. I'm wondering, what does that mean to you? What does that milestone mean?
Well, Chris, it's gone by fast. I mean, it seems like when you're playing, it was a you didn't realize how fast it went by. But as coaching, you look at that number, it's almost like I can't believe it's already been one in our 20th year, and we've been fortunate here. We've had some great teams. I started with in St. Louis with a great team. Assistant coach in Colorado with a great team. Colorado, we're flying there again, and we've had a special team here for 9 years. So it's been being around great players. It seems like the years go by faster, and winning obviously helps it bring more enjoyment to it as well. And organizationally, a lot of people have helped us have a lot of success here in Chicago, and it makes like almost like, okay, the year started. We're already at the second half of the season here. We played game 43 last night, and this season's flying by. But it's been fun. Our years in Chicago have always been the best part of it with the success we've had, and what a great town to be involved in, and a great sports city as well.
Joel Quenneville is with us, the head coach of the first place Chicago Blackhawks, leading the Western Conference in the Central Division with Darren Millard, Gordy Stellick, and Chris Johnson with us. We're into this cycle now where teams are going through their 5-day breaks. So when is yours, and what do you think of this?
It's new. It's a. I don't mind it. But we've been really busy, and I know we got some breaks coming up. We got you got the All Star Weekend, and ours is in the middle of February, where we get the 5 days off. Maybe ours is six. We'll practice that 6 day, and then we got 4 days off in a row in March. So our second part is kind of normal schedule. So hopefully we can take advantage of it. We're in the middle of the 4 games and 6 nights. It's the first time I remember the other night having back to back home games here in Chicago during the season. So it was a 4 and 6 nights at home. It's a little different, but we find a way that we get a lot of days off, and then when we do get a good break like that, take advantage of it, because our top guys, especially, I think this will help these guys, knowing that they don't get All-Star breaks off, they don't get Olympics off, they don't get the World Cup off. So maybe this will help them, refreshing at a key part of the season.
What are you going to do for the 5-day break? You going to get out of town?
I think the All-Star break, we're going to stay here, and then the other break, we'll probably go to Colorado for a few days.
Nice.
Now, Joel, you're saying to Chris's question, the 1,500 games went quickly, and I don't know if you guys remember, but back in 93, Pat Burns was the coach, and Mike Kitchen and Mike Murphy were assistants, and Cliff let two guys named Joel Quenneville and Mark Crawford come with the team in the Stanley Cup Finals, because they were coaching the AHL affiliate. So that may be the best five-man coaching staff ever in NHL history, but I'm wondering, as you were getting set to start your NHL career then, who are the coaches that made the most impact on you from junior on?
Well, I've been fortunate to be around a lot of coaches as a player and as a coach. So it was a number of guys that Roger was my first coach there in Toronto, and certainly you learn a lot from him, and not only the preparation, the importance of playing your position and being ready to play every single night. Jack Evans was one guy that. We look and I see how many guys from our Hartford days that are playing in the NHL, are coaching and doing things in the hockey world. It's almost like the entire team is still involved in hockey, and I give Jack credit for that. I had Don Cherry in Colorado. We put him out of business for good. Their team, and we've had a bunch of coaches that all had an impact. I find that no matter which coach that I played with, there's always something that you appreciated and you learned from, and then you try to apply it. But at the end of the day, you got to be yourself and do what you do. And you think when you're making decisions that you're doing the right thing that are best for the team.
We'd be remiss, I guess, if we didn't ask you a bit more about your team. And obviously, Ryan Hartman getting a hat trick yesterday is a guy league-wide, people are getting to know a little bit better.
Great flow.
What have you seen from him, Joel? And, how is he fitting in with your group?
He's getting better. I think he's progressing without the puck. He's one of those players that hangs around the net. He's got some physicalness to him that he gets around the net. Last night, you can say what a hat trick that was. One goes off his pant, and the other two go in the empty net. One was a fluke going in the empty net. So it was like an unusual hat trick with about 8 minutes to go in the game. But certainly we'll take him. He brings that little sandpaper to our lineup, and we can use him on both wings. We use him on different lines, and we've got some other guys that we're hoping to progress as well. We're going to need these young guys to be a part of our team and be important players as we're going along here. So far, Hartsey's had some good progress here, and we're looking for some of the other kids to keep going here as well.
How do you decide when to put Kane and Taves together?
You know, I think that we always had a Kaser's always been, his line's always been fine, and Kaner always makes his line a special line. And for years here, I think we're looking to find a center for him that could work. And last year when Anisimov came here and with Panarin, it was amazing how good these guys were right off the bat. And now we look like we had a you know, 1-2 punch in the middle, and Kaner, and that line just took off. And I think that now we had a deeper look. And then and Johnny is, we always find Johnny's lines effective in a lot of ways. Johnny might not have the firepower that Kaner's line did or does have, and we give him some shifts. Usually throw him out there after a penalty killing, give him a little bit of shifts there. We include him with the power play there. Then we get matchups in the playoffs, and sometimes we're looking for maybe a little bit more, you know, getting different matchups or different looks, and I think it's whether it's a field thing or trying different things. But the bigger the game, the bigger the stage, these two guys rise to a different challenge, and they're amazing players as far as getting the job done, getting better as games get more important or series get deeper. You couldn't ask for two better guys, and sometimes we'd like to spread the wealth throughout the lineup, and then sometimes we'd like to put them together when on a need basis. And that's usually when we go there, and that's probably when the games get a little bit more important, we put them together.
One and one is two, baby, you know. Two on two is four. I'll be back tomorrow night, mama, come. Jump to the front door, singing, come on, girl. Baby, do you wanna go? Funky by Columbia.
There you go. Coach of the Chicago Blackhawks, Joel Quenneville. Quenneville? Eh, whatever you want. All right, still to come, we'll talk about the National Football League, the Wild Card Weekend, what's to come. DK, coming up next, Dan Kalis, as usual, on a Monday night as we continue with Sportsnet Tonight. Grant Robinson with an update. Before that, in just a moment, this is CFMB 1280 AM, Montreal.
Gotta go to the pub. Ye old Orchard Pub. Gotta go to the pub. Ye old Orchard Pub. If you haven't been there, you probably should. Yeah, the beer is cold and the food is good. I think of all my friends in the neighborhood. Gotta go. Gotta go. Gotta go. Gotta go. Gotta go to the pub. Ye old Orchard Pub.
Now open on Salaberry and Chateauguay.
Gotta go.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Gotta go to the pub. Ye old Orchard Pub. Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go to the pub. Ye old Orchard Pub. If you haven't been there, you probably should. Yeah, the beer is cold and the food is good. I think of all my friends in the neighborhood. Gotta go, gotta go. Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go to the pub. Ye old Orchard Pub.
Now open on Salaberry and Chateauguay.
Gotta go.
You want your money to grow. You want it to be there when the time comes. Let me tell you about Paramount Financial Services and Lauren Rubin at 514-905-0885. He's taken care of my money for years, and I can worry about other things. Does your financial advisor move your money around constantly to make sure he's making money, whether you do or not? Let's not forget, it's your money. And Paramount Financial Services will take care of what's most important, and that's you. Call them at 514-905-0885. It's your money. Grow it for a better future. Paramount Financial Services.
Say goodbye to buffering, stuttering, and annoying pop-ups. Say hello to Sportsnet Now, a new way to stream sports without cable TV. Matchups from the MLB, NBA, and the NHL. And more of your favorite Sportsnet programming. Plus, watch every Blue Jays game on any device in true high definition. Your sports, your way, starts now. Visit sportsnet.ca/now to start your free trial.
Another great year at Windmill Heights Golf Club. more work done as the course gets better and better. And more improvements on the way for 2017. Family-owned with an ear to their members. You have a suggestion, they'll listen, but chances are they already know. They play their own course. Golf too expensive? Not this year. Call Windmill Heights Golf Club and we'll make it work. I love the ease of travel, the food, and the fact that they won't ask me for more money when the season's over. Great food, great golf, great price, great members. Call Lino Carboni, 514-453-7177, extension 3. 514-453-7177, extension 3. They're creating something special at Windmill Heights Golf Club.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
Welcome back to the show. Time for the National Football League. Daniel Kalis waiting on. We'll take it one by one as they arrived in order, starting with Houston and Oakland on the wild card weekend.
Merciless and Clowney, third down and 12. Cook, design roll. Down to the right, he threw it up for grabs. And it's fielded by Clowney, whose ankle tackled by Latavius Murray. Can they punch it in from the four? Lamar Miller, the lone back. Lamar Miller trying to get outside. Touchdown, Houston. Brock Osweiler throwing a deep ball, and it is caught. After the fake, another great throw by Osweiler. Hopkins
on the release by Hopkins. Can't throw the ball much better.
Well, our season ended sooner than we really wanted. It got off to such a great start. And winning 12 games is not easy to do. But just came to an abrupt end the last 2 weeks. Not able to do enough as a team to carry on and continue on.
Jack Del Rio sounds like he's going to cry. He should have done that 2 weeks ago, because that's really where this playoff game, well, really, they didn't lose this playoff game 2 weeks ago. They wouldn't be in the playoff game yesterday if not for 2 weeks ago. Dan Kalis, how you doing?
I'm still licking my wounds, but trying to get over it and enjoying this national championship game.
All right. See, I didn't have to worry about that. I had no expectations going into the weekend. Once Derek Carr went down, I think that we had a pretty fair idea that the Oakland Raiders were in a whole lot of trouble. Although, you know what? A couple of drop passes, but it still didn't look like Connor Cook was capable of winning a football game on Saturday.
No, but, you know, without the left tackle and then the center, Rodney Hudson went down, yeah, the drop passes, Crabtree goes out. You know, I like you said, you go into the weekend without any expectations. I think there was a lot on his shoulders, but he really didn't get any help whatsoever. But it's unfortunate because I think the Oakland Raiders were a team that was going to be reckoned with, and I think we'll have to wait till next year. Houston's going to get a real whooping next weekend, I think so, from New England.
Thank you, by the way, Oakland Raiders, for drafting Connor Cook one pick ahead of where the Dallas Cowboys were. I really do appreciate it.
So
and
what
the thank you cards in the mail.
Now, I'm listening to, God, I wish I remember who I was listening to today, but they really ripped Connor Cook, saying this guy's not an NFL quarterback. He didn't throw. He threw for like 40% or something his last year in college or something like
his
that.
His last year he got hurt. He hurt his shoulder. The year before his last year, he shouldn't have went back because he was considered to be a super high prospect. Everybody loved him. And his last year, I agree, he was pretty
garbage.
Because
the 2 years before that, he'd won the Rose Bowl, he'd won the Cotton Bowl, and then he came back and whatever. So you think that this Houston defense... What if they knock out Tom Brady?
Like we've discussed a couple of times, the only way, or not the only way, but the way that seems to have worked in the past to beat Tom Brady is you've got to get to him, you've got to pressure him and move him around, because he can't move in the pocket or, you know, run around, let's say, like Aaron Rodgers can or some of the other mobile quarterbacks. So if Clowney and some of these other guys can get to him and hit him, yeah, they have a chance. But I just think that, you know, Belichick's going to scheme enough that, you know, Brock Osweiler has trouble on a good week with a bad defense. To go up against Belichick, where he's had time to plan and do this, I don't see that they have a chance, really.
All right, game two on Saturday, Seattle 26, Detroit 6.
A third and one, and they're going to run the ball, and rolls again, burst through the line of scrimmage. There's Wilson down there to throw a block to help spring him, and he takes it to the 35-yard line. A huge hole through the middle. Thomas rolls.
That was a good block.
Second and six. Another big hole, and Rolls having a big game. Take the Rolls. Wilson's got a wide one. You got all
of action in the end zone. You get two flags, and somehow, some way, Paul Richardson comes up with the ball. Rolls, and he's able to spring away again. What a night for this guy.
Game we've been looking for, style-wise, fit-wise, with offense and defense. Both sides of the ball played great tonight. Really fired up to see us run the football like that. Obviously, you guys all saw it, and Thomas got a bunch of yards. But the guys up front did a fantastic job, starting with Britton, and working on out. Everybody. Tight ends contributed. Marcel contributed to it, fullback. And it was just a terrific night to see us run the football.
Talking football, obviously, with Daniel Kalis, as we do Monday, Thursday, Friday.
Thomas Rawls, you heard it in the highlight package. I mean, this is a guy who, I'm in a playoff pool where you pick playoff teams or players. I'm the only one who has him. That's how much, you know, people really didn't give this guy credit. They think Process is going to come back. He ran all over the Lions. Russell Wilson and Doug Baldwin really only got it going and put those stats up once the Seahawks were already in control. How important was it for the Seahawks to get the running game going? And were you impressed by them this week?
I was very impressed, and I think it's very important because they talked about it before the week. They wanted to get him going. He's been up and down with the injuries all year, but any of the games where he's gotten a good amount of carries and touches, he's put up the yards, and he runs really hard. The other problem was, as they said, the O-line has been shaky, but it was really good this week. And I think it's going to be really important in their matchup this week against Atlanta, because Atlanta could put up a lot of points. So I think they're going to want to try and go in there, and they're going to try to control the clock and run with Rawls and pound the ball like that. And hopefully their defense can do what they did last week. Obviously, it's not at home, and it's against an offense, you know, that's moving along much better. But I think Rawls is going to be a huge key to how this game goes next weekend.
So, I mean, you have to be concerned if you are planning for Seattle and seeing the way that they managed to open up holes for this guy, and the fact they can run. If they can run the ball, then Russell Wilson is a problem with Seattle's defense, and I know everybody's going to have a guy missing or two. Seattle is a problem for the teams in the NFC coming up.
Most definitely. The thing with Seattle is they haven't proven to be able to win on the road in the regular season or on the playoffs. So they're going to have a big test, because it looks like they're going to have to win at least one, if not two games in a row on the road. And that's never easy to do, you know, to do that. They've lost already once a couple of years ago to Atlanta, and Matt Ryan's only playoff win. But if this O-line is going, which was a work in progress off season, if they can get these guys going, I think Atlanta's going to be, you know, not scared to face them at home, but it's not going to be an easy game. Seattle's going to come gunning for them with defense and offense.
All right, the Detroit Lions, they made the playoffs again. They didn't win a playoff game. There have not been many of those in their history. What does Detroit have to do to take the next step?
Well, I think one is unfortunate that, you know, you can't really measure the injury to Matt Stafford, because I think that totally changed the way that they were playing. The other is they need to get a running game going. They tried, I think, five or six different backs to get going. So they need to get a running game going, so the pressure isn't all on Matt Stafford. And the other thing is, year after year, their defense has been a little bit better, but they've never had a good defense, and you can always use to be a better defense. So I think they need to work on the defense and get a running back.
When you look at, well, I think we have to play the next highlights, right? Before we go.
Which game do you want to?
Well, the next one. Pitt Steelers. We're going in order.
Pittsburgh 30, Miami 12.
He goes right down the sideline. Is Brown breaking it? 50 yards and a touchdown. His first postseason touchdown, Antonio Brown. Second and seven, and what a catch by Brown, and he slashes right past the secondary, and he's taken off for a second touchdown in the first 8 minutes.
Well, he's got 100, and he's got a whole lot more. Second and two. Well, turns it on.
Yeah, it's great to get the win. Man, we don't take it for granted. You know, this time of year, the road gets increasingly narrow, and it's good to still be on it. A lot of significant contributions from all parties involved. You know, the real, you know, summary of the game is we had the big three rolling on offense, and we stopped the run on defense. And we do those things. We got a chance to win games regardless of circumstance, the situation, or opponent.
Steelers coach Tomlin, why doesn't this guy get more credit?
I find he actually gets, forget even any credit. A lot of people are talking about, you know, it started with Terry Bradshaw and some other people that, you know, maybe his job should be on the hot seat. I'm a huge fan of his. They're in the playoffs every single year. They've had injury issues that have withheld them. You know, Bell's his first playoff game Bell had. So I think that's held them back the last couple of years. But I think he's a great coach. He's not afraid to go for it when they need to. And I would love him as my coach if I was a team in need of a coach.
As you heard in the highlight package there, by the way, we could have put a whole highlight package together pretty much from the first quarter, and it would have been done. But Steelers pretty much did whatever they wanted to offensively. If they wanted Bell to look good on this drive, well, he was going to run all over them. If they wanted Brown, you saw the two touchdowns. They made it look extremely easy. Was this more an indictment on the Dolphins' D or a sign of how good these Steelers are?
Combination of both. I want to give, you know, you got to give a shout out to the three B's, Ben, Brown, and Bell. These guys were amazing. They were just, you know, breaking big play after big play, whatever they needed to do. Like you said, they wanted to go Bell or Brown. And Miami just wasn't ready for it. They didn't come in ready. And unfortunately, they had a couple of good drives that could have kept the game in it, but they kept turning the ball over, you know, in the red zone and then in Pittsburgh zone. Whenever they had a chance to, you know, get some points on the board, they seemed to, you know, shoot themselves in the foot. So I think that if Kansas City can get an early score and get, you know, their control the game the way they want and not get into a shootout, because that's not going to work for them, then I think Kansas City is a good chance, and they're always tough at home.
And I will say this. You had Pittsburgh and New England as the last two standing in the AFC when we did our preseason. Now it comes to this one, and obviously this one hurts if you're a Giants fan.
Rodgers scanning. Looking for a stop. They're going to air it out. Rodgers does this better than anybody. End zone, Cobb, touchdown! Unbelievable!
You know, you practice these things so much. You practice them every Saturday, and first you got to have the protection. It's the right call there. You know, it's 6 seconds, and you know, the throw of that ball with the arc, that's really the key to it. You know, it gives your receivers a chance to catch that ball. And Randall Cobb just made an excellent instinctive play. So big play. Obviously, it gave us something going into halftime.
All right. But seriously, it's inexcusable. I'm sorry. As good as Aaron Rodgers is throwing the ball 50, 60 yards, there has to be somebody there to catch the ball, and you have guys there that are supposed to make sure that he does not get behind you. It's not that difficult, really. It's like watching Canada lose in the junior championship for a guy who has put the puck through the legs of three goaltenders in a row, and then he puts it through yours. This guy throws the ball in the end zone. Why don't you watch the receivers?
I have no excuse for it. I was obviously watching the game and couldn't understand it. You never, ever let a guy get behind you. It was sort of payback for the 0-11 game where Akeem Nick scored a touchdown on a similar play, Hail Mary, at the end of the half. It's inexcusable. It changed the whole way the game was. You know, they had already missed some opportunities earlier in the game and only got field goals. But if they would have gone in down 7-6, that's one thing. But, you know, it was just, it's inexcusable. There's no excuse for it. You should never let a guy get behind you. I don't care who's the quarterback or who the receiver is or how high he can jump or who can throw the ball. The Giants just shot themselves in the foot, and Aaron Rodgers made every play that they needed to. Like we discussed on Friday, the Giants' O-line couldn't help them get the run game going, and Aaron Rodgers is some scary guy to play against.
I'm not rubbing anything in right now because this could very well be me answering these questions next week with Aaron Rodgers, the way he's playing. But honestly, I'm just curious, what hurt more? The Hail Mary was bad, right? Before the half, was that the biggest gut punch, or was it the Clay Matthews, you know, the presence of mind running up, hitting Paul Perkins, the fumble? Which one was worst play?
You know, to be honest, the moment Beckham dropped the two early passes, you know, you watch your teams all year and you know your players, you know the way they go. When he drops those plays, that's not normally like him, and it makes me feel like, uh-oh, something's not going to go right this game. You know, and then they get the field goals, and then the Hail Mary, and then that ridiculous play where the guy caught the ball on the 3-yard line instead of letting it bounce out and it goes to the 40. Just everything was going wrong. There's no excuses. The Giants played absolutely horrible. They had chances to be in this game and even maybe win this game. But Green Bay was ready to go. They had no running game, and Rodgers was just picking them apart without their best receiver. This guy is just something special. But you know what? The Giants just didn't have it yesterday. They didn't come ready. And, you know, yes, they were in the playoffs this year as opposed to the last 4 years. But you know, doesn't it, like Ricky Bobby once said, if you're not first, you're last.
All right. This is it for you and I. It's time for the Losers Club. We are out of the playoffs, so I will sum up the Oakland Raiders season as a staggering success and more than we could have hoped for. And obviously, we didn't get an opportunity to watch it finish, but certainly there are hopes in this team growing. And if they grow any more than they did this year and the quarterback comes back healthy, then you'd have to believe with the addition of another defensive player that the Oakland Raiders come back in 2017 as a Super Bowl contender. So all in all, 9.5 out of 10 for the Raiders season from what they accomplish and from expectations leading to accomplishment. And it makes it easier for the season to end the way it did with the injury to quarterback Derek Carr. Your turn, Giants fan. Your team is done, so give us a rundown on the Giants season.
After a whole bunch of very disappointing seasons and a team that went from being an all-time defense team to being atrocious and having the worst defense in the league last year, it was great to see the free agents they brought in. I think their defense is going to be something to be reckoned with for the next bunch of years, so that's exciting. Beckham's up and down in terms of his craziness worries me a little bit, but the truth is we knew going into the season they would have O-line problems. Hopefully they adjust those in the offseason and maybe get a tight end. And I think the Giants will be right back in and fighting with the Cowboys for the NFC next year.
All right, before we let you go, I'll let you and Grant discuss. 14-0 now for Alabama. Same guy tiptoes down the sidelines, and Bama has a 14-0 lead. A couple of opportunities now. Clemson 4th-and-1 Alabama's 40-yard line. They went for it, didn't get it. Now, same situation. They punt because they're scared, and it looks like they're on their heels.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, the truth is, it's only Bo Scarborough. The quarterback, yep. Jalen Hurts, hasn't really thrown for only 20 yards. But this Scarborough guy is a beast, and it's almost a wonder why he wasn't being used more often earlier in the season, because the last couple of games, this guy can't be stopped.
There's no way he's only 230, by the way. I don't believe it at all. They list him at like 225. Anyways, any picture you look at of this guy, I don't buy it. But I will say this. You follow college football during the regular season. Like, you even traveled to go watch it. You went to Texas and watched college football. I got to respect you there. But when you watch these teams, I'll say this. Clemson's not done, because they've been in games like this all season. I think they had like 7 games that came down to them having to come back. They're a tough team. The only time they failed was against Pittsburgh. But this Alabama defense is just on a different level. I mean, did you hear the stat I said with Elliott before?
Sorry, what was it?
If their defense had not, or if their offense had not scored a single point all year for Alabama, they would still be 6-8. That's insane.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. That's
I when I saw that, I couldn't believe it. And I think that there's a long list of guys on this defensive team that we're going to be seeing and watching on Sundays for the next many, many years. You know, the Jonathan Allen, the Tim Williams, these guys are they're just animals out there. These guys are going to fill up the first round in terms of, you know, the whole defense. The offense, I don't know how many guys will go in the first round, but they're going to fill up this draft. It's a very impressive defense and an impressive team. Nick Saban is just, you know, he's arguably the best coach ever in college.
And a lot of people think Alabama's defense is like this every year. Yes, they're always a great defense. Deshaun Watson put up 40 points and 400-plus yards against them last year, 4 touchdowns. Done nothing so far. This defense is the real deal.
Hey, DK, thank you so much. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of the game.
Right. So, you know, kind of loses a little luster. You know, if you're a Raiders fan or a Giants fan.
Absolutely. That's brutal.
But, you know, again, for Raiders fans, the luster was taken off a couple of weeks ago. I mean,
that's what I thought you meant, is losing your quarterback. Nobody
wants
that.
There's you're going up against the number one defense in the National Football League. That's the last thing you want a third-string quarterback to have to do. Being the first ever player to start for the first time at quarterback in a playoff game.
Maybe the last after seeing how it went.
Well, it wasn't because it wasn't that's the choice. Way they I wanted it to go. You know? And look, it's on me too, because I wanted him to start over McGloin. I didn't like what I saw there. And clearly, McGloin was not capable of playing yesterday. I don't care what they say. At some point, they would have put him in.
Yeah, there's no question. Yeah. There's no question.
So they ran out of quarterbacks. All right. Gets her kicked. 1-0 Washington. The Canadians and the Caps are just starting the third period. We have an update coming up and then some interesting conversation. Ken Rosenthal joined the boys in the morning in Toronto to talk Blue Jays. Did the Blue Jays misread the market? We'll find out coming up. First, Grant's got an update. You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price. This is CFMB 1280 AM in Montreal.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go to the pub. Ye old orchard pub. Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go to the pub. Ye old orchard pub. Well, if you haven't been there, you probably should. Yeah, the beer is cold and the food is good. I think of all my friends in the neighborhood. Gotta go, gotta go. Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go to the pub. Ye old orchard pub.
Now open on Salivary and Chateauguay.
New to the country? Via Rail and the Institute for Canadian Citizenship partner to give a gift to each Canadian citizen during their first year of citizenship. The Cultural Access Pass provides complimentary admission to more than 1,000 of Canada's cultural treasures from coast to coast to coast. The Cultural Access Pass creates opportunities for Canada's newest citizens to discover our rich cultural history, world-renowned artworks, historical figures, and stunning parks. Go to icc-icc.ca. A message from Via Rail Canada.
Truck and Roll moves concerts, some big name bands all over North America. But Truck and Roll also serves some you've never heard of. Big and small, they take the same painstaking care. Trade shows, theater shows, concert events, experienced drivers ensuring timely delivery and professional service. Because the show must go on. And that can't happen if whatever you need to be there doesn't get there when you need it. Call Truck and Roll 514-421-0045 on the net at truckandroll.com and on Facebook. Truck and Roll delivers on their promise and on time. There's a lot of moving parts. Call the experts to assure that your complex ground transportation logistics are handled by those who know what they're doing. Because every second counts. We cover Canada and the United States. Call Truck and Roll 514-421-0045 on the net at truckandroll.com and on Facebook.
Elliot.
C'est moi.
You're a bad man.
Elliot.
I'm the guy.
You're a very bad man.
I'm hip. I'm with it.
Elliot.
I'm very important.
Well, I'm here to tell you that you're probably going to find out as you go out there that you're not going to amount to jack squat.
Sportsnet Tonight.
Weeknights at 8 p.m.
Oh! You know you can't bring that weak-ass stuff up in this humpy bumpy.
Give and take. What can I do?
Welcome back to the show. Canadians, 31 seconds left on the power play. Let me know if you've heard this before. Lars Eller takes dumb penalty in key spot, which is doubly painful for Washington because he's one of the better penalty killers, and they're one of the best penalty-killing teams in the league. But Canadians power play down to 31 seconds. I don't know what they're looking at right now. Shea Weber with a great chance hit the post. And 13-11 left in the game. Canadians down 1-0 to a goaltender who eats them alive in Braden Holtby. You see the Canadians can do with the rest of this power play. Meanwhile, the Toronto Blue Jays, here it is. It's January 9th, and they still have gaping holes, right? Haven't filled the corner outfield spots yet, and they're missing a couple of bats. And again, you say, it works both ways. It's April. It's January 9th. And you can also say, well, it's January 9th. So it works both ways. The thing is, there are a lot of guys out there still, and you don't have to have no one's writing out a lineup card. Canadians just tied it. Thomas Plekanec on the power play of all people. No one's writing out a lineup card for tomorrow's game, so nobody has to worry about that. But they are going to have to hand in a lineup card in April, and they're going to have to find some people before them. Ken Rosenthal, one of the best. From Fox Sports, join the boys this morning, Dean Blundell and company, in Toronto, on the morning show, Dean Blundell and company.
Great pleasure to welcome back to the show, insider for the MLB Network and senior baseball writer for Fox Sports, Ken Rosenthal. Good morning, Ken. How are you, sir?
Good morning, guys.
Thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it. Great article on not just, you know, the market and not, you know, where sluggers are headed, but, you know, in the market being different, but how, you know, the Blue Jays may have mismanaged this whole thing. Share with us if you can, because I found it very interesting. There's so many different factors that have gone into where value is now, when it comes to, you know, signing free agents in Major League Baseball. But, you know, it's also a different game for teams that have really kind of had to wait and see and misjudge a whole bunch of stuff, including the Toronto Blue Jays.
Well, first of all, my basic point is, if you're going to criticize Encarnacion's agent Paul Kinzer for turning down $80 million for 4 years, which is a fair criticism in my opinion, then you also have to look at the Blue Jays and say, okay, did they misread the market? Now, the way they handled Encarnacion, in my opinion, is questionable. Token offer last spring was a two-year extension with two options. Then they make an offer before the start of free agency, but they basically say, you've got to decide on this quickly. Now, when you've got an elite player like an Encarnacion, that is generally not the approach teams take. And you can look at some other examples from around baseball. The Dodgers didn't tell Justin Turner, now or never. The Pirates didn't do that with Ivan Nova. The Orioles didn't do that last year with Chris Davis. They waited. They waited to see what the market would bear. And in the cases of the Pirates with Nova and the Dodgers with Turner, they ended up getting good deals because of it. The thing I don't understand about the Jays, and this is what I wrote, is why they felt compelled to move so quickly to Kendrys Morales. Even if they had lost Kendrys Morales, who I understand they value and believe is a good player, maybe even a producer comparable over the next couple of years to Encarnacion. But even if you lose him, there were plenty of other left-handed hitting options out there, Morales, a switch hitter. You could have gone in any number of directions. It wouldn't have been a fatal blow, and you could have hung in there for Edwin and saw what happened. Maybe they could have been the team to get him for 60 over three, or maybe not. Maybe he just would have said, I'm not taking that from my old team. But they didn't give themselves the chance to do that. They effectively cut off the process. Again, it's a little difficult to question them in a global sense because last year they did a similar thing with Marco Estrada and with turned out great. So maybe by getting the early bargain, they're going to win out here. They're going to be okay. But it just seems to me they could have handled this better too.
But why did they have, you know, was it, first of all, was it a case of, hey, we don't want to miss out and that's our guy? Or was it a case of, hey, listen, these are the principles we manage our team with, and here's our drop deadline. And if so, why did they have a drop dead, kind of, not clause, but why did they put, you know, that time on it where they said, you got this time to sign it, otherwise we got to move on?
From what I understand, it's because they didn't want to lose Morales. They didn't want to be left, in their view, with inferior options. They really like Morales, who is a switch hitter who can really hit, not much younger than Encarnacion, only 5 or 6 months, and certainly doesn't offer defensive and base running value like some of the other options available, but they liked him, and they wanted to jump on him. And in the end, the deal they got on him, $33 million for 3 years, was considered a very good deal from the club's perspective. So, again, I get all that, and they've made good decisions in the past. Like I said, last year, in the same kind of fashion, they didn't have an Encarnacion. What I don't get overall is two things I mentioned before. Why you had to go so quickly to Morales when you had other options available, and why you had to eventually force the issue with Encarnacion. That could have been different.
Does it really just kind of come down to the, you know, for the infinite wisdom or whatever metrics or algorithm or was it war or this or you're on, whatever they put into it, whatever formula they had, they just didn't want Edwin back?
Well, if you're the Blue Jays, and let's say you're Mark Shapiro, and he's on the show right now instead of me, and you ask that question, he would say, I offered Edwin Encarnacion $80 million over 4 years. How can you say I didn't want him back? There are, however, in this sport and in life, offers that you think a guy might refuse. I don't expect the Blue Jays thought that Encarnacion was going to take that deal. Now, they still offered it, and they have to be acknowledged for that. They offered him the $80 million, probably would have gone higher. We know that.
Yeah, the most. They offered him the most.
Yes, as it turns out. But at the same time, here's a guy who's really trying to be a free agent for the first time in a big way and wants to explore the market. That's what these guys do. They explore the market. Now, of course, the criticism in reverse, and this is a criticism we've talked about and ad nauseum we've discussed this. Hey, you're Paul Kinzer. You've got $80 million on the table from the team that you want to play for. He's 34 years old this season, Edwin is. What are you waiting for? Just get the best deal possible. I certainly see that logic, and I certainly understand that argument and agree with that argument. But at the same time, the Encarnacion camp says, hey, why was this such a rush? Why couldn't we explore the market? And there's always two sides to every story. And with this particular story, guys, there are a lot of shades and a lot of nuances. And I don't think it's black and white. And that's why I wrote what I did. I just felt that the agent was taking too much heat and obvious heat. We all get it, okay? He seemingly forfeited $20 million by his negotiating strategy. But at the same time, the Jays had their own share of responsibility here.
Ken, could it be as easy to say that the Blue Jays valued the first pick compensation for both Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion more than actually bringing those guys back?
I don't know that I can say that they value that more. They certainly value the picks. There's no question about it. And they've been pretty upfront about wanting to rebuild the system. They believe that what they inherited from Alex Anthopoulos was not what it should have been, though it's probably better than what they expected. And yeah, they want those picks. They want to get younger. They want to do all these things. But with Morales, they didn't really get younger. They got a shorter deal and less exposure from a financial perspective, but they didn't necessarily get younger. So, yeah, the picks enter into the equation, but the quality of the player also is part of the equation, and they know that. Bautista is a different case. 36 years old, not much of a defender anymore, and a guy that you're not giving 3 or 4 years to. No one is. So I don't expect that's going to happen, that reunion. But at the same time, we'll see how low that price goes. And if it goes to a certain level, at some point, the Jays do have a formula, like all teams have formulas, where it becomes sensible. I don't know what that number is, but that is the case.
What do you have to say to Jays fans this morning, Ken, that, you know, in winter meetings, everybody's like, oh, it was just the winter meetings and no big deal. There's lots of time left. You're certainly not going to go into the 2017 season with those corner outfield spots the way they are right now, and you need a catcher, and you need some bullpen help, and you need to solidify first base. What do you say to those fans that go, hey, listen, we don't see this coming, and we don't think the Jays have had a good offseason at all?
Well, the offseason isn't over, and you guys are right, the winter meetings are complete and a lot of the business is done, but I'm going to go on MLB Network at 9 a.m. Eastern with a list of players who are still available. It's a stunning list, both in trades and free agency. There are a lot of good players available, and teams such as the Jays are waiting. Now, not all the teams are going to get the players they want when you have this kind of impasse going on, but just from the offensive side alone, there are a ton of guys. The pitching side, it's not as deep, but the Jays' needs aren't as pronounced. So I expect that by opening day, if not by day one of spring training, they'll have a couple of new bodies in addition to what they've brought in already.
Ken, a lot of fans hoping here in Toronto that the Jays can somehow, some way, find a way to bring Joey Votto finally to this city. He's a Canadian, he's a local kid, and that would solve a lot of problems for the Jays, especially offensively and at the first base position and being a left-handed bat. Is that ever even close to being a possibility here in Toronto?
Well, it was reported that last year they made a run at him with Alex Anthopoulos as their GM, and it didn't seem to get off the ground. I don't expect that under this regime, Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins, it's necessarily something they want to do unless, big unless, the Reds kick in a lot of money. And the reason I say that, we've seen now, in a couple of examples, the Jays' unwillingness to go long with older players. Well, Joey Votto is getting to be an older player, and his deal certainly is long. So it's not the kind of thing that they want to get into, the downside of his career. Now, he's still a really great player, and he probably will be for a couple of more years, but you're taking on the whole contract, and that's a ton. So, again, there's a number. There is always a number where it works financially in the Jays' mind, in any team's mind. But it's going to take a lot of aggression from the Reds and creativity from both teams to get something like that done.
Do you think the Jays have, if you were to a betting man and you were to say, here's what I think that they were probably doing from the sources that you follow and people you talk to, do you think they have, a significant move that they might be able to make? And if so, what do you think that might be?
Define significant. Is it a major move? No, I don't expect them to make a major move. I do expect them to get at least one more outfielder, maybe one more bullpen piece. I can't predict this stuff, guys. I have enough problems trying to report it. But I do expect that they're going to remain busy and try to kind of round off the team, for lack of a better phrase.
I don't know, the Canadians. What happened, Grant? I leave you for a minute in charge.
I'm not going to complain when the Canadians lose. The problem is it's not often anymore.
Jeff Petrie undressed by Kuznetsov and then miscommunication on a Carey Price pass and out from behind the net, and Connolly scores. Wow, now there is a grumpy Radulov. And the Canadians find themselves right after they tie it at one. Washington pots a pair, and they're now up 3-1. What's going on in the rest of the National Hockey League, as we do every single night before we sign off? National Hockey League Fantasy Update, that's coming. This is Sportsnet Tonight with Elliott Price, CFMB 1280 AM in Montreal.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Hi, welcome back, as we do every single night at this time. Get you a little music to accompany us. There we go. I get to finish with one of my favorite songs of all time, because it's my birthday. I get to play what I want. Not like every other night when I get to play what I want. 3-1 Washington over the Montreal Canadiens.
Not good.
Jeff Petrie has had better periods. It's like he wasn't having a bad night. I mean, the guy played, what'd I say, 17, 18 minutes?
Yeah, he was playing a lot, and then...
Told you played 19 minutes. So I do believe it was Petrie and Beaulieu and Deneau, and I think the same guys were on the ice for the second and third goals. Canadians with a chance now. 8:04 left in the period, and Habs going to the power play. But two quickies, that hurt. Time the goals come at. I guess they... Here we go. Come on, give me the goals here. 8:12 and 2:48 later. So 8:12 and 11 minutes. After Thomas Plekanec had scored at 7:18 to tie the game at 1, his net's off less than a minute later, in Washington now with a 3-1 lead. It was Backstrom from Ovechkin and Alzner. Plekanec on the power play from Byron and Lehkonen. Then Kuznetsov from Ovechkin and Williams. That's 998 career points for Alex Ovechkin. He has 543 career goals. So he is 2 points from 1,000 and one goal from Rocket Richard. Connolly from Kuznetsov on the go-ahead goal. Washington 2. Washington 3, Montreal 1, 19 saves for Holtby. And what do we have for Carey Price? Oh.
A lot of saves. At least 30 by
29.
Now. Oh, he's not at 30 yet?
I got 29 the last count. He's probably at 30 by now. There you go.
And one turnover. Do we count that? Guy makes one bad pass all season. Come on, give him a break. He's still the best at it, I find.
He makes more than one bad pass.
Florida 3, New Jersey 0. Roberto Luongo, remember, he was out. They pulled him from a start last week. He didn't play all weekend. Reimer did. Comes back. Not a bad debut again here. 28 saves, shutout. First game back. That's his 73rd of his career. He's three behind Ed Belfour and Esposito for ninth all-time now. Vincent Trocheck and Jussi Jokinen, each with a goal and an assist. Riley Smith had the other goal, and Yandel the only assist, the only player who had only an assist. Corey Schneider. Tough break playing in New Jersey sometimes. They had 26 saves on 27 shots. You lost by three.
Oh.
Like, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
all right. 1-0 Winnipeg over Calgary. Of course, the Jets without Patrick Laine, and we don't know for how long after the big hit on the weekend. Dustin Byfuglien with the game's only goal so far from Drew Stafford and Nikolaj Ehlers.
On their triggers.
Chad Johnson, 18 saves on 19 shots. And Hellebuck, 18 saves on 18 shots. 1-0 that game with 16:50 left in the third period. Winnipeg 1, Calgary nothing. And Dallas in L.A. That's it. That's all we got.
You get another happy birthday, Elliot Price.
Thanks!
On behalf of Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
We thank, not necessarily in this order, but in this order, Mark Dumont from Habs Eyes on the Prize, all the folks in Toronto for servicing us with Joel Kenville, and Ken Rosenthal, and of course Dan Kalis are taking care of our NFL. Tomorrow, Scott Morrison from Sportsnet will talk to Eric Engels about the Montreal Canadiens and the NHL. And of course, on Tuesdays, we always talk basketball with Canada's Olympian, Dwight Walton. On behalf of Grant Robinson, I'm Elliot Price. Thank you. If you missed it, sportsnet.ca for the podcast. Have a great Monday night.
In the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun. In the muzzle flash of Roland's Thompson gun.